Call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Present.
Vice Chair Abbott.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Hunshofsky.
Here.
Representatives Anderson.
Here.
Benjamin is excused. Barrero. Botana.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Franklin. Griffiths.
Here.
Placon.
Here.
Rudman. Steele.
Here.
Stevenson.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Temple.
Here.
Tremont.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
Thank you. Members, we have a quorum. This is the December 13th, 2023 meeting of the Insurance and Banking Subcommittee. Welcome to all. As a reminder, please silence all of your electronic devices. Members, please remember to turn your microphones on and off when speaking. Members, we have four bills to hear today. We will commence with HB 585 by Representative Rommel. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chairman and members. It's cold down here, do you know that? I'm from Naples, but good morning, Chairman, and thank you, members, for being here this morning. HB 585 will require financial institutions to file a report with OFR when a financial institution terminates a customer's account because of suspicious activity. The bill will require OFR to investigate and report to determine if the action was made in bad faith. If the action was made in bad faith, the Department of Financial Services will be notified, the Attorney General will be notified, and the customer will be notified. If it was in bad faith, the customer will have the right of a private right of action, and the CFO could impose other fines and penalties, and that is the bill, sir.
Thank you. Members, questions on the bill? Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Can you explain why you want the suspicious activity report when the federal law does not prohibits that information from happening?
You're recognized.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. If there's a report since in 2022, there was 1.8 million Americans that accounts were terminated because of suspicious activity. And that's an increase of about 50%. In my own region, it wasn't my district, but I got a call from a customer, a business that, a very large business, does millions of dollars a year in business, and he was notified that his accounts were being terminated without any reason. And, the federal government has these rules for banks. If it is suspicious activity, especially while they're doing an investigation, because, we don't want drug dealers, illegal armed dealers to do banking activity. But it does seem like it's a one way without anyone to determine besides this bank whether it's suspicious. So I think as a state, we have an obligation to protect our citizens in case a bank is acting in bad faith.
Follow up? You recognize?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Let's say that someone's money laundering. There has to be no way to stop those people from retracing, their steps and pulling back. We want to find what the reason for the suspicious activity is and what laws are being broken. How are you going to be able to distinguish between that with your bill?
You recognize?
I personally won't, but the Office of Financial Regulation will. What the bank has made a determination to see if it was in bad faith or not bad faith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I was wondering, are you familiar with any consequences that banks may have when they're notified that there's suspicious activity in the account? Are they somehow induced to act? Because I would think they'd want to keep the money if they could, keep the deposit base.
You're recognized.
Great. I can't tell you why banks would debank somebody for non-legitimate reasons, but it's happened.
Follow up.
I have read, and it's not authoritative, but because of this bill, I've looked at some articles, and it said that there's a risk of fines and penalties. So I don't know how it looks from the public depositor's point of view, because this doesn't apply just to banks. It also as other public depositors, I'm sure. I understand the intent, but I also don't understand what the regulatory wall that they face, what their risk that they face in that. And they may have other reasons to debank other than suspicious activities. I don't This is a unique area, and I just wondered if you could give us a little more background.
You're recognized.
Yeah. I don't know what the federal penalties for them for discrimination and debanking somebody for non-suspicious activities are. But, you know, banks can debank people. I mean, if you, banks have rules for based on, minimal deposits, inactivity, and things like that. They're allowed to debank the people. But if they do it for suspicious activity, we want to know because that means they're thinking that one of our citizens is doing something illegal. And we have a right to protect our citizens if they're not doing something illegal. Many people that are debanked, they don't know why. And we never hear about it because it's not broadcast publicly, and we don't want to broadcast it publicly because if you are a bad guy, you want to keep it private. But we want to have an opportunity to make sure a bank is not acting in bad faith. If we remember our HB3 last year, banks were acting in bad faith, and we corrected that problem, but we want to make sure it's not happening to public deposit, people that have, bank, checking accounts, credit card accounts, and things like that.
You're recognized.
Thank you. There's just one additional thing. One of the, that if somebody's debanked for cause, then there's a mark in their record that other banks would be aware of. I mean, I don't know exactly how those things work. So are you also hearing that people are having trouble getting on with another bank in these circumstances?
You're recognized.
The bill doesn't address that.
Rep. Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Romo, I have been reading, trying to find information about the fact that the government, federal government, have access to whatever information that they have when it comes to the banks. And I'm concerned about the burden that this might put on the banks. Are you concerned that reporting the information to the federal government might put some burden on the banks, knowing that I can't even get an appointment at my bank right now?
You're recognized.
I'm not concerned with the burden of the bank. We have an obligation to protect our citizens. And if they are currently reporting to the federal government, it's probably just another click of the key to report it to us.
Follow-up?
Yes, you're recognized. Are you aware that there's a shortage in manpower right now that we are facing all over? And this is why I asked the previous question.
You're recognized.
Yeah, I mean, there's a workforce shortage everywhere, but that doesn't give us a pass on protecting our citizens.
Follow-up?
Are you concerned about the fact that we're interfering with federal government?
You're recognized.
Requirements.
First of all, I'm not concerned with interfering with the federal government. You know, the U.S. Constitution gives the state of Florida under the 10th Amendment the right to protect our citizens, do anything necessary. And this has nothing to do with the federal government. This has to do with banks. And when they debank somebody for suspicious activity, whether it's a federal crime or a state crime, we have an obligation and a right to protect our citizens and make sure the bank is not acting in bad faith.
Rep. Woodson? I'm done. Rep. Tant, you're recognized. Rep. Tant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In respect to the current bank examination process, is that not capturing this information?
You're recognized.
Not to my knowledge.
Follow up.
Do we have a, thank you, Mr. Chair, is there a cost to this new investigatory tool?
You're recognized.
The staff analysis does not include a cost.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Redman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rommel, you probably are aware of the fact that back in 2022, the Canadian government did some pretty heinous things. Canadian banks, they were freezing assets of people simply for protesting COVID restrictions. Would your bill have any effect on if such policies were to infiltrate our state, or if banks were to kind of pursue things in that regard?
You're recognized.
I would imagine if OIR looked at it and the bank said, we're canceling your account because of your belief on or disbelief of COVID, I believe they would probably find that in bad faith, but that would be up to them.
Franklin, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks for coming today and having this discussion with us today, Rep. Rommel. My question is around kind of reporting mechanisms. I know you mentioned, every single time maybe something's closed as a report. Is there a way to consider maybe, because I agree with, you know, of course, protecting consumers and their rights, but I kind of think about there could be an abundance of burden on the banks as well as OFR. But if a complaint came where a citizen said, hey, I feel like I'm being done wrong, I feel like for whatever reason I'm being discriminated against, could that then spark some sort of investigation? The reason why I bring that up is just naturally, I know big banks obviously have huge budgets and can absorb a whole lot. But I'm thinking about some of my smaller depositories and some of my smaller banks and smaller communities that might not have, and to your point, I think clicking a button is fairly easy, but I do know some smaller businesses don't have the same kind of capacity of maybe a huge bank. So I asked that question where we might get lower burden if there's some reporting mechanism saying, hey, I believe I'm being done wrong. There's some bad faith mechanism. Can we have someone look into this for me to be able to kind of create that process?
You recognize?
Thank you. Well, I'm hoping out of the 22 million Floridians, we don't have that many criminals doing suspicious banking activity. So I'm not sure how many would happen, because I'm sure most criminals are pretty sophisticated. But if it happens to one person, it's too many. And this is not saying that you have to report everybody that you're no longer doing business with, just ones that you think that you're doing that are doing suspicious activity. And I think we have an obligation and a right to do that.
You recognize?
And I know previously in your statement you mentioned there was maybe 1.8 million people unbanked. I'm not sure if that was countrywide or statewide. So my question is also kind of around, I guess if we're saying it's not a whole lot, 1.8 million to me sounds like a little larger number. So I'm kind of trying to zero in on also the market that exists. So, for example, I'm a supporter of the free market, and naturally if bigger banks or community banks or debanking people, I'd love to get into the banking business if they're doing it wrong and be a good faith banker and go make some good money and provide services. So oftentimes, you know, the marketplace can solve a lot of issues if institutions and incumbents are unwilling to do certain things. There's examples of that, of course, in the history of our country. So my questions around, you mentioned 1.8 million. How big is that unbanked market here in Florida, and what's really the challenge here in Florida in that space?
Thank you for the question. We don't have it distinguished by state, but it's the alarming number when I saw that it was 1.8 million people in 2022. And that was a 50% increase in only 2 years. So it means either criminals are getting really stupid or banks are finding way more people, or they're just determining, you know, that they're going to debank somebody because they don't like them, and it's not just suspicious activity, but they're using suspicious activity as a reason. And so, I think we have an obligation to make sure that since there is not a systemic problem with a bank, or a bank is using a form of discrimination. You know, years ago, banks used to discriminate based on, you know, people's race, creed, color, or where they lived. And to me, it's a form of discrimination if they're using suspicious activity because they know no one else is looking at it. They can just hit the button, suspicious activity. We don't know about it. Many times the customer doesn't know about it, and they just say, oh, I can't bank here, and they try to open up a new bank. So, again, I'm not worried about the burden. And, yes, if banks, this does not stop a bank from doing business with somebody, period.
Rep. Steele, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Rep. Rommel, for bringing this forward. Out of the 1.8 million people that were affected by this, how many of them complained about the debanking? Do you know?
You're recognized.
That number was not reported in the report. The report was from the New York Times, and not to quote them, because normally I disagree with a lot of their philosophies, but it was an important number. It was just really alarming when, in a short period of time, when we've seen, you know, unfortunately politics could or could not come into play, but we've seen things happen across our country. And here in Florida, we just want to make sure that if banks are suspending or terminating somebody's account for suspicious activity, we want to make sure it's legit.
All right. Rep. Rommel, you are recognized to explain Amendment Barcode 499911.
It's purely a technical amendment, just making sure that code of conduct is bad faith.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, do we have public testimony on the amendment?
No, sir.
Okay, there is none. Any debate on the amendment? You're recognized to close. You He waives close. Are there any objections? Without objection, show that amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Any questions? Seeing none, we have public testimony on the bill as amended. Anthony DeMarco, Florida Bankers Association. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. It's always great to be the first one up opposing the chairman's bill. Anthony DeMarco, Executive Vice President of Government Affairs of the Florida Bankers Association. I'm reading a different bill than was explained up here. This bill does not say suspicious activity. It says you will close an account for any reason other than a customer. Once the account closed, the account is deemed there's no activity, or it's deemed unclaimed and is sent to under chapter, I think, 717 to the DFS. Any other time an account's closed, for whatever reason, a form has to be filled out. It has to be sent to OFR. OFR then has to investigate it and then make a determination. Banks are in the business of taking in deposits. And by the way, this also includes my good friends at the Credit Union Association in their world. So I just want to make sure that they're included. We keep using the word bank, but I want to make sure the love is spread around all of us on this. We take in deposits, we lend them out, and that's our business. We're not arbitrarily closing accounts, and we're complying with the law. If we, under the Bank Secrecy Act, we have to file a suspicious activity report, and there's a variety of reasons why. I'm not an expert on BSA AML, Bank Secrecy Act, Anti-Money Laundering Act, to give you to delve into that. But we have to file a suspicious activity report. That does not mean your account will be closed down. And under those circumstances, under federal law, we are not allowed to tell you we filed a SAR. We call them a SAR. A suspicious activity report's a SAR. They're filed. The customer can't find out. The IRS calls about the account. We can't tell the customer because we're not allowed under federal law. The state examiner is not allowed under federal law. This notion that it's just a few clicks of a computer keyboard and it goes out is incorrect. There'll have to be information stored. It'll have to be sent. OFR will have to investigate it. I presume that means they come into the bank and they do an investigation, or they call somebody, they get more information. And this is not instigated by the consumer. You all just passed, writ large, the legislature, the state enacted HB 3. That's now law. If a person's account is terminated for discriminatory reasons under HB 3, that's the penalties that are in HB 3 will accrue to that bank or credit union or a qualified public depository, depends on where you are. This is not the case. If the account's closed for any reason that I've talked to some bankers, if the person comes in and is a big jerk to the tellers and all, they say, we don't want to do your business, get out. Just like a restaurant would do, just like a hotel would do, just like any small business or big business, retail establishment would say, we don't want you, get out. So we'll have to file, we don't want your account, we're not doing business with you, you're just a bad person, as one example. And if that happens, then they have to be investigated. Now, if they find bad faith, it moves forward. But I don't know exactly what bad faith means under the law. And anyway, going back to HB 3, that's the consumer can complain. There's a mechanism under that. Every bank and every credit union is examined every 12 to 24 months, give or take, depending on the health of the bank. I'll just stick to the banks when I talk now. Part of what they do, every regulator does, is they look at compliance with law. HB 3 is the law, and they have to comply with that law, and they're examined on that. And the law is only enacted 5 months now. The banks have done what they're supposed to do under there. There haven't been any complaints that I've been told about, aware about. And we're just starting this whole new regime, and now we're going to add on a whole different layer of that. But Anyway, federal law, like I said, does not allow you to, in certain circumstances, say why you're doing certain things. Most of the time, the banks will tell you why they don't want to do business with you anymore. You know, and this notion that banks are just closing accounts arbitrarily, I think is fallacious as well. But there are examples of that, I've been told. But the free enterprise system works. I thought Florida believed in the free enterprise system. If a bank does not want to, any business does not want to do business with you, there's another business down the street you can go to. And you can go do business with them. There's no, anyway, I'll just leave it at that. Finally, I'm just going to tell you, you know, like I said, banks take in deposits, we make loans. Our business is to help make dreams come true. We're here to help you start your first loan for your business, your home, your car, whatever, and start building your capital and your financial resources so you, as you move on in life. I tell my children are in their 20s, and I've been beating on them. I'm a little biased about how they have to, well, how they need to save and move forward. And that's what banks and credit unions allow you to do. And more onerous compliance that really gets you nowhere, that's already in addition, is not going to help that happen. And, you know, compliance prices, costs rather, are one of the things that are very hurtful and are leading to, you. I mean, I keep hearing about community banks. We represent the biggest to the smallest, but the more compliance costs that you see banks and credit unions go through, you're going to see more mergers and you're going to see less of those neighborhood banks. And so this is just another piling on for something that isn't really there. And I'll take questions. I think I've been on my soapbox long enough.
Rep thank Steele you. Has a question yes. for you.
I recognize.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for coming up.
Thanks.
I'm going to tell you that I think it was about 5 or 6 accounts closed down, and it was for dormancy. And I'm not sure if this is
no, we're not
in line with again. Thanks.
No. I want to make that. There's a couple of exceptions, but that's one of them.
Rep. Tant, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have 2 questions, if you don't mind.
Yes, ma'am.
In respect to this new provision, will this impact consumer access to capital and credit?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. I should have thanked you last time. I apologize. I haven't done this since May. April, so I forgot. There is a potential that could happen. If a customer was to walk in, the bank, what banks do in credit unions is we assess risk. If a person is a riskier potential customer, and there may be a chance that we may have to close that account down later on, then they may not decide they want to take that risk. Why would you open up a business? Somebody could walk in, open an account, walk in, and have the potential of being sued. On top of that.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the cost of compliance. Do you happen to know the average cost to banks for having to pay and the number of positions required in order to comply with state and federal regulations and the fiscal impact of those current regulations?
No, ma'am. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. no, ma'am. I don't have a cost. I can tell you, I like to use the analogy, if you walk into a restaurant, you want the restaurant to be clean, but if you hire 9 janitors, 1 cook and 1 waiter, your restaurant probably won't make it. And this is just another cost to come. I couldn't tell you, and I don't know how to tell you how much this would cost going forward. But I can tell you that the big banks, someone was mentioning about the big banks, they have a lot of people, but they have a lot more accounts. So everything is relative to what you're doing. There is an increased cost to them as well. And I'll just say one more thing, going back to the private right of action, is that you know, the legislature enacted a tort reform package on insurance last year ago to stop costs of insurance. And this is adding more potential lawsuits is not going to help, is going to lead to the, could lead, not will lead, could lead to the same outcome that necessitated that bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Redmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in Canada, donating on a GoFundMe page to a truck driver was considered suspicious activity, and accounts were locked and frozen. Do you believe donating to someone on a GoFundMe page is reason to terminate an account?
You're recognized.
Well, I have no idea. But I will say what you are talking about is government intrusion in the marketplace. And this bill is along the same lines as that. If you want to decentralize and not have that power, adding more things like this bill will only increase that kind of control over the enterprise system.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I respectfully disagree, but I'm a physician and I run a solo practice. Mm-hmm. If I were to be debanked for donating to a political cause, do you think I have a right to know that?
You recognize.
Well, it's kind of, you would, under HB3, you would find out, you could go and find out what was going on, potentially. But if it's under federal law, we may not be able to tell you. Well, you have a, I think I have a lot of rights, but sometimes the government tells you I don't have a lot of rights. And if federal law says we can't tell you, we can't tell you. And by the way, as I understand the law, if OFR sees some of this information, I don't think they can tell the Attorney General or CFO all of that. They can't turn that information over as well. I could be wrong on that. I want to caution that statement by saying that. But I'm not sure they can either.
Rep. Franklin.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks for having this discussion with me. My question is around any reports or claims. Of course, I think it's important to, of course, protect consumers and their rights. But my question is, are you seeing a lot of reporting happening in Florida saying I've been debanked for frivolous reasons? And when that does happen, what's the current mechanism in place to help ensure that people aren't being discriminated against for different causes?
You're recognized.
I have not seen, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have not, I've seen a lot of those. The few stories I have seen or heard, remember, it's the person who's been, their account's been terminated as saying they've been debanked for political reasons. And maybe, let's just take them at their word that's exactly what happened. I don't believe it, but let's just take it at their word. The free market system works where they walk down and it's not a great situation. I understand that. It's not just as easy as walking down the street and opening an account. I fully admit that. But there's other banks, there's other credit unions, there's other ways that you can do business with people. And one of the reasons you're seeing, as an aside to that, the rise of what the regulators may call the shadow banking system, because they have less regulations and less costs, and they can comply faster with customer requests. And so this is just another thing to help gum down the system. Let me say it, make sure I said it right. I hope I answered your question.
Follow up.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And my follow-up is, how many people are making claims that they're being debanked? And also those who do make those claims, what's the current reporting mechanism and process that they undergo?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no idea how many. They would have to, the way I read HB3, they'd have to contact the regulator. There's also the CFPB up in Washington, the other federal regulators as well. There's a host of mechanisms they can go and the CFPB, they do a lot of that. They do a lot of surveys, et cetera. So they're one that take up that kind of information as well. So
you recognize.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I was only asking the question because I was really trying to see what problem we're trying to solve, and if there is a problem, is why I asked the question. Try to see what's the market space and what we're trying to solve. So that's why I asked the question. So maybe we can follow up. I can reach out to OFR about some of that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I think they would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think they would know. I don't know. I've only heard anecdotally. They're not calling my office and telling me. But, you know, and just like I said, somebody thinks they've been, the access has been terminated because of political reasons. It may be that they're not paying their bills. They're in trouble some other ways. There's a host of reasons why people, I mean, things and other things do happen. I mean, I'm not saying that they don't, but you know.
Rep. Tant, you're recognized. Okay. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. DeMarco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank
Members,
you. All.
We have no other public testimony, correct? All right. Thank you. Members, we're in debate on the bill. Rep. Steele.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I'm a math guy, and I think that 8% of the population are not drug dealers. I think that's a bit high in my mind. So the idea that we're shutting down 8% of Floridians, it'd probably be more like 1% if it was a drug dealer. So I'm up on your bill. You know, there may be some changes that we need to make to make everybody happy in the room. But at the end of the day, I think shutting somebody down just because you don't like their behavior, unless they're being belligerent, that's a whole other story. But I do appreciate you bringing the bill forward. Thanks.
Rep. Tant.
Mr. Chair, I thoroughly enjoy working with you, and I highly respect you. I have significant issues with this bill, partially and largely because I represent some state banks in rural areas, Madison County in particular. They called me yesterday. They're very concerned about how they're going, the costs of this to their operations. They're very concerned about how this provision juxtaposes with their bank charter rules as well as their federal requirements of the Bank Secrecy Act. So I'm also just really concerned about consumer access to credit, particularly in our fiscally restrained counties when those folks are already struggling. And then, of course, my local bank here, Capital City, they were the first to call me with concerns. And so I'm going to be down today, and I hope that we can continue to work together and hopefully reach some modicum so that we can all continue to do what's right without the interference into the business of a private enterprise. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Rudman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'll be voting up on this bill. This is a very good bill. And I appreciate our conversation last week when you and I sat down. I think we see the world very similarly. As someone who was outspoken during the COVID era, I'd hate to wake up one morning, you know, and go into my clinic just to find out that I've somehow been debanked for no good reason. So I do have that sense of distrust. I do feel like I have the right to know what happened. And, you know, per our conversation, I think you and I see it similarly. We're just kind of going about it different ways. For myself, I've become more of a cash guy lately. You know, I prefer to deal in cash. I think cash is king. But I certainly agree with your sentiments, and you have my full support on this bill. Thank you, sir.
Rep. Woodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Rommel, I'm going to start by saying that I hope you will continue to work on this bill so I can support you, because I really want to support you. However, I have some concerns about the bill, which you can tell by the question that I asked where I'm at on the bill. My first concern with the bill is the fact that it will impact banks, especially the small banks, what we would call the little people. You know, the small banks will be impacted in the sense that we are having a crisis right now with manpower, and because there's a mechanism in place to report, the federal government have access to all the information that they need. So right now, I don't think it's the time to put some additional burden, especially on the small banks, which I don't have any issue with reporting, but that's an issue to me. The second concern that I have is access to capital. We know the black and brown communities specifically have issues with access when it comes to getting the capital that they need to do whatever to start their business. So that's also a major concern of mine, because I want everyone to have access to capitals and to banks. So for those reasons and a few more, I will not be able to support you today, but I hope we can continue to work in order to make the bill better so you can get my support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Parisi, did you indicate earlier you wanted to debate? Yes, you're recognized.
Representative Rommel, thank you for bringing this good bill. I'll be up on it. I do have some concerns. I am also a reduced red tape kind of guy. It concerns me because it kind of looks a little red tape-ish. There are industries that I do believe need to be reined in sometimes. And I certainly, the issue of being debanked scares the heck out of me. I haven't had any of my constituents in particular tell me that they've been debanked, but I'll look out in my community for it. I'll support your bill. I think I'd like to look at it a little bit more closely, and we can talk as it moves through the process. But the intent of the bill is strong, and I support it. Thank you.
Ranking Member Hanshofsky.
Thank you, Chair. I think the intent behind this bill is really good. The idea that transparency, it should always be present when we're having any kind of contractual relationships, whether it's with a bank or anybody else. And if somebody's being debanked, I think under the right federal laws, they should be allowed to know why. And it would also help ensure there aren't any sort of discriminatory practices. I love the intent of it, but I'm a little concerned with some parts of the bill of if they're really going to be able to legally, in some cases legally, and in other cases, they're really going to have that effect that we're trying to have. Because if they go to the OIR, they still, depending on what the reasoning is, they still may not be able to communicate what the reasoning was because of federal laws. And then the question becomes, what's the next step, and is that further infuriating? So I think the bill needs a little more looking at on how it can maybe fall a little bit more under where the intent is, but not causing more red tapes and more issues. So I'm very torn on this, but I'm happy to continue talking with you, and I appreciate the work you've done on this with the stakeholders. And I especially appreciate, it's always great when we see representatives coming here, bringing problems they've heard in their district so that the people we serve in the state of Florida know that no matter what their issue is and no matter where they live in this state, they are being represented well here in the Florida House of Representatives.
Rep. Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the spirit and your concern about people being discriminated against in their banking relationships, which is really important to their ongoing business. My concerns about this bill is, you know, we talk about the impact of the banks and we don't care about the banks. Well, they always, free enterprise, they go out of business or they pass on cost to individuals. So it's an inflationary pressure and could increase the cost to all of the people who are banked, commercial and individuals. If we were local, we have rules to keep local government from passing regulations like this without fully understanding the issue, which I think that we need to be thoughtful about that. Decreased competition means we have less alternatives. And I want to tell you, if somebody doesn't want my money because of my beliefs, I want them to not have the benefit of my money. And we have seen the free enterprise do that in the hedge fund arena when people were discriminating against certain industries because of beliefs, belief systems, and beliefs and values. They gave us choices as consumers for how we invest our money. I personally, it sounds like the bill is in conflict with federal law, which is problematic. I wonder if it would jeopardize the privacy. The more people that know about something, the more likely somebody that knows somebody is going to say something and they'll get tipped off. So it might be jeopardize high-level law enforcement actions. It forces, and I appreciate Dr. Rudman's concern and what he's experienced, but we do not force private businesses. We don't force doctors to see people that they don't want to see. We don't do that. Well, maybe we do. I don't know if we passed a bill like that or not. But usually private business isn't forced to serve people unless there is discrimination. And that's kind of what you're trying to get to on beliefs and values. So at a minimum, I think that it shouldn't. Actually, an individual may not like to have their private, perhaps questionable information smeared around the state as they work to resolve things. So I personally appreciated the Representative Franklin's suggestion at least narrow down the cost of it by making it complaint-driven. So I'm still learning about this area, and out of my respect for you, I won't vote down on this again, but I have serious concerns. And it's not about who I like. It's about the unintended consequences of your good intentions. And that is my debate on this today. So I would prefer to see it come back with improvements. And I think that being the first stop, and we have the expertise, I'd rather see it done here. Thank you.
Blaken.
Thank you, Chair. I'm a yes today, but I just want to ask that you continue to work with all stakeholders to find maybe there may be some better solutions out there to accomplish what you're trying to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further debate? All right, members, I'm actually going to debate on this bill. I appreciate the members of both parties who have expressed support for the free enterprise system, for competition, for lower regulatory burdens. But I think we would all agree there are some businesses and some commercial activities that need some minimum standards. So I would say restaurant health inspections or food safety inspections, right? Those are regulatory burdens on that commercial activity. But I think we would all agree that those are worthwhile burdens because they protect a larger interest in society. This is a business activity that is, I would submit, different from Rep. Rudman's. You can go to any doctor you want. It's your personal health. You control it. You make that decision. Financial institutions hold and control your property. That makes it different, in my opinion, because they have something of yours that they are owning and holding and controlling. And if they decide not to give it to you, you're hamstrung. It's yes, you can go to a different bank, but you have to get your property back. So I would say to my good friends in the banking and financial services industry, I understand the corner that you have to fight on this battle. But unfortunately for the industry and for all of us who are the policymakers, trust, once lost, is hard to get back. And we are not dealing... Oftentimes, we pass policy that is hypothetical. We are guarding against some harm that is real, but potentially has not occurred yet. The harm that Rep. Rommel's legislation is attempting to address has occurred. It is real. It has happened in this country and in Canada, as we talked about today. So I'm sympathetic to the concerns that everybody has expressed. But at the end of the day, even those of us who support free enterprise and lower regulatory burdens and competition, I think must recognize that individual rights, individual property rights, civil rights trump those concerns. And unfortunately, this legislation, and not unfortunately, that is the policy preference that he is favoring with this legislation. And unfortunately, that creates difficult choices and burdens that we are going to have to continue to work on and perhaps refine. But at the end of the day, I think this is the right values to prefer over those other admittedly important concerns. So with that, Rep. Rommel, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for the kind words there. And I don't want to thank Anthony DeMarco, too. And you know, I was a banker in a previous life, and for many years we were on the same sides of multiple bills. In the last 2 years, I've pushed back on the industry because of bad behavior, or presumed bad behavior. When I was building my business to get customers, you know, I knocked on doors, advertised, I did whatever I could to attract customers. And we had multiple state and federal regulations to abide by to make sure that we didn't discriminate. We gave credit to those that qualified. We didn't terminate their credit because, you know, they were mean or didn't like their look. And I would never do that. And I still find it hard to believe. But, you know, maybe banking business did get too big and that these large institutions would use their clout to dictate social policy or whatever they're trying to dictate. That's why we ran the bill last year. And over the summer, I did see a situation back home. I do want to thank Anthony also for you know, being concerned that the bill could cause frivolous lawsuits, and everybody that knows me for my first 7 years here, I was the one that worked on tort reform for 7 years. And, you know, thankfully last year with the help of Speaker Renner, Senate President Pasadena, and the governor, we got the most transformational tort reform package done. And this bill will not increase any frivolous lawsuit, period. The only way the consumer or the customer that was debanked could bring a private right of action if we, the state, determined it was in bad faith, that they just canceled them and it wasn't because of a suspicious activity. So, and then I would imagine if we did that, we would notify the bank, and then the bank would probably make some type of settlement for their sins, you know, in a very, you know, fast action. And I know Anthony DeMarco also said that, you know, they're reviewed by the state every 12 months to 24 months. And right now, when we do that review process, we don't look at suspicious activity because we don't know about it. But I happen to carry dead presidents in my pocket. I don't know how many people do in America anymore, but not enough for me to do activity for more than a day or two. Just imagine, and this is not saying a bank can't tell you to open an account. Because first of all, if you're opening a commercial account, it's very difficult. It's extremely difficult, and banks do not have to open accounts for you. But once you're there, they do have rules and requirements that this doesn't touch. Now, if you don't have a lot of activity, you run below their minimum requirements, they can debank you. That's the rules already. This does not. This just says if you're debanking them for suspicious activity, we need to take a peek to make sure you're doing it for the right reason. We're in the next bill, make sure that we keep it, that information private, so if there is a federal investigation for a criminal activity or suspicious activity, we don't jeopardize that. So we're not going to go and tell anybody. We're only going to tell the customer that was debanked once we determine it was bad faith. And you know what? I have faith that our agencies are going to do the right job. Listen, we have 22 million people in Florida, and our agencies have pretty much every private information on every one of our citizens, and I don't think they're smearing it around. So we have to have faith. But just imagine if today you went home, or on your way home, you know, you went to use your Uber to get home and your credit card didn't work and now you're stuck somewhere. Or you went home and you had to pay your electric bill and your bank didn't work and you couldn't get any information from your bank. Your assets are frozen, period. Can't get any information. We can't talk to you. What do you mean you can't tell me? Can't talk to you. So you say, okay, and luckily you had a couple bucks, you know, hidden in your safe or your sock drawer. Now you go to another bank and try to open it. Can't open it. And you're not a criminal. You didn't do anything wrong. You don't know why, but you're in a panic because your life is over. It's over. You can't pay your bills. You can't cash your paycheck. You are done. Banks, yes, they're private businesses, but they have a social and economic responsibility to people to make sure that people that are acting in good behavior can continue to act in good behavior and live their lives as we all live here in America. Listen, the bill came to me because it did happen. It happened to a very large business, not in my district, but in my area. And he told me what happened. It didn't just happen to his business. It happened to his family members. It happened to his key employees. And yes, he was, and I don't know if everybody, he was able to get a new bank to do it. So obviously it's not because of suspicious activity because somebody else is taking his business now. But if you have a business, whether it's large or small, and you're put through that hell, it's awful. It's awful and it should never happen. And I know some people, and again, I was a small business. Again, you know, we did about 1,000 loans a month. Somebody just texted me. It's a financial institution, does about $14 billion a year in business. So it's not really a big business, believe it or not. And last year, they debanked about 12 people for suspicious activity. They said, with this bill, would not add any burden, period, to them. And they actually thought it was a good idea because they know that they have a right to make sure that they're doing the right job and everybody in their energy does the right job. So I encourage everybody to support this bill, whether you have concerns or not, because the bigger concern is you or any of your constituents or anybody in the state of Florida that are debanked just because they can. With that, I close.
Rep. Rommel, having closed on his bill, Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin is excused. Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Franklin?
No.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
No.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Woodson?
No.
Thank you, members. By your vote, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Rommel. You are now recognized to present the companion public records exception legislation, HB 587.
Thank you, Chairman. HB 587 just creates a public records exemption for any information that the state receives from the bank for anybody to bank for suspicious activity, to keep that private and make sure nobody else knows about it because it's important to the ongoing investigation, and that's the bill.
Any questions on the bill? There are no amendments. Any public testimony on the bill? There is none. Any debate on the bill? Seeing none, you are recognized to close. Having waived close, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
I'm sorry. Yes. All right. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm in the right spot. So we went so fast, I thought, did we skip something? Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin is excused. Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Thank you, members. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chairman. Everybody have a wonderful Christmas and holiday season. Thanks. Thank you.
Members, our next bill is HB 215 by Representative Trunow on risk retention groups. Rep. Trunow, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members. Risk retention groups. We saw this bill last year in a different form. This bill is crafted to solve a specific issue. Significant confusion exists as to whether risk retention groups are authorized to do business in Florida or sell commercial vehicle insurance to its members. Federal law provides such authority and preempts the states from prohibiting it. However, because of the confusion, legislation is being pursued here in this bill to prevent that. That's the bill.
Members, questions on the bill? Rep. Tant, you're recognized.
Mr. Chair, will this bill help commercial or help insurance rates for autos go down?
You're recognized.
The commercials?
It does not seek to do that. It seeks to fix a specific issue in those who want to allow their members to have the insurance.
Follow up.
Will it create more providers so that could have an impact?
You're recognized.
It could.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Rep. Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Trunow, I have a question for you regarding NARA. Have you consulted with them or have you spoken to NARA, which is the National Retention Risk Association?
You're recognized.
Yes, I have.
Follow up.
Have they made any recommendations to you, and how amenable are you to their recommendations?
You're recognized.
Yes, we've had several discussions, and we are working through it with multiple stakeholders.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Rep. Franklin.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this to the committee, Mr. Trunell. Rep. Trunell, much appreciated. My question is around, will this have any additional requirements for risk retention groups to operate here in Florida?
You're recognized.
Not at all.
Follow up? Okay. All right. Rep. Trunell, you are recognized to explain Amendment Barcode 538847.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment just provides that motor vehicle insurance coverage issued by risk retention groups operating under federal law and registered to do business in the state satisfies the financial responsibility requirements of state motor vehicle law and preserves current law regarding risk retention groups within the Florida Insurance Code. And that is the amendment.
Questions on the amendment? Rep. Tan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does this mean that these entities will not have to be licensed under our insurance code regulations, or they're separately insured? They're separately licensed?
You're recognized.
They're recognized under the federal statute for risk retention groups.
Any further questions on the Rep. Stevenson?
Yeah, just in general, this is also an area I haven't worked with directly, but how will we, if we're going to let risk retention groups go directly to individual customers, is this a retail kind of opportunity for people? Is that correct?
You're recognized.
No, it is not.
Oh, so if they, if you're doing it for cars, tell me how that works, that where we know where an individual is buying insurance for their car or their truck fleet or something, how will they know whether the assets of the risk retention group are sufficient?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So this is tailored to commercial insurance for its members. And specifically, the bill resolves confusion surrounding risk retention groups and addresses the issue dealing with contractors performing work for DOT and their risk retention group is to satisfy the commercial motor vehicle liability policy requirements. That's all the bill does. It's narrowly tailored for one specific issue. That's it. To avoid using a fronting insurance company.
Oh, okay.
Follow up?
Yeah, so this would be business people, more sophisticated consumers that would be able to consider that. Is this okay? Is this work for DOTs? Any concerns DOT would have?
And you're recognized, and perhaps you might explain that this is for the members of the group.
Thank you. Yes, this is specifically for the members of that risk retention group.
Okay.
Doing right. Business with DOT.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Any further questions on the amendment? Do we have any public testimony on the amendment? Okay. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wait, close.
Any objections to the adoption of the amendment? Seeing none, show that amendment adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Any debate on the bill as amended? Ranking Member Hanchofsky.
Thank you very much, Chair. And Rep. Trunell, I appreciate the time
you
took.
I'm sorry. I screwed up again.
Okay.
We have public testimony on the bill as amended. Chris Dudley, Florida Trucking Association, waves in support. Joseph Deems, National Risk Retention Association.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing me. My comments will be very brief. I am the executive director of the National Risk Retention Association. We are the association representing risk retention groups nationwide. Risk retention groups only operate in the United States. They do not sell insurance to members of the public. They only sell insurance to their own members, which have to be owners of the company. If created for the right reasons and the right purpose, and if they're formed the right way, they have traditionally shown the ability to outperform the traditional industry. The Congress created this particular animal in order to address the problem of unavailability and unaffordability of liability insurance. The law's been around for in excess of 40 years. You have 128 of these insurance companies registered to do business in the state of Florida. Under the federal law, a risk retention group is licensed and admitted in one state, its state of domicile, and under the federal scheme, they're allowed to then write product in the other 49 states under a device that the Congress created that would minimize the regulatory compliance for these groups consisting of predominantly small or mid-sized businesses. Right now, the state is seeing approximately $350 million in gross written premium from risk retention groups. We represent literally tens of thousands of small business people in the state who are able to take advantage of this type of a program. I want to express my sincere gratitude to Representative Trudeau because we did have some input, as he indicated, in the creation of the original bill. The bill itself is 1,000% compliant with the federal law, which coincidentally happens to be mirrored by two different statutes here in Florida that mirror the federal law. Under the program, most risk retention groups can only be licensed and admitted in one state, which regulates them, forms them like insurance companies, regulates us like insurance companies, goes through all the same actuarial studies. Just to give you another frame of reference, the typical risk retention group, almost all of them have reinsurance. We are reinsured by some of the largest reinsurance companies in the world, including domestic companies like Swiss Re, Gen Re, and things like that, as well as numerous syndicates in the London market. So risk retention groups are backed up by heavy-duty capacity to take care of that. The reason I rose today was to let you know that the original language to this bill, which graciously Representative Trudeau allowed us to have some input into, is 1,000% compliant with the federal law. I would also point out to you that the words in the amendment are also compliant with federal law. As a matter of fact, they say almost the same thing. The reason I rose to you, however, today, and I put down on my little sheet that I was here for informational purposes, was the fact that last night I submitted a proposed amendment to the amendment, and unfortunately it didn't get into the final version today. So many of you may have been told in advance of today's hearing that this bill is a work in progress. And I've spent the week here. I came here on a mission of education. I've met with the insurance department here. They're actually proud of the number of risk retention groups that are doing business in the state. And, you know, as a work in progress, it is the kind of a thing that will need some more work with us. But that was all I wanted to add, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that I've worked on a very cooperative basis with the members of both sides of the aisle on this to talk about this and to talk about these companies. They fill a void. We fill a significant void in the insurance industry in Florida, and I don't want it to be jeopardized because of the inability of everyone to have a full chance to appreciate this absolutely ingenious structure that has been created to help thousands and thousands of your constituents. Thank you very much.
Mr. Deems, Rep. Woodson has a question for you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir, for your presentation. You mentioned there are 10,000 small businesses in Florida that are part of the RRG group, risk retention group. Would the new version of this bill impact the small businesses in any way or not? Positively, in a positive way.
You recognize.
It won't hurt them. It won't hurt them. And actually, as Representative Trudeau indicated, The purpose behind the amendment, as some of you may remember, we rather vigorously opposed the iteration of the bill that came out a year ago. Since that time, we've worked very closely with the members of the House and the Senate to come up with language that would allow us to resolve certain inconsistencies that exist in Florida law between the various statutes to just clarify the standing of these groups. That's mainly what we did. So the language in the amendment basically says the same words that the original amendment had, except I had some other tweaks and changes to it that I thought would be appropriate to put in there, but we haven't had a chance to get to that, and I'm hopeful that in the months to come we will actually have an opportunity to work our way through that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deems.
Thank you, everybody.
Ranking Member Hunchofsky, in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Truenau for spending time discussing this with me. And you had also mentioned in your comments when we had our meeting that you're still working on this, and I appreciate the work you're doing with the stakeholders to get it in the right place. And I will be supporting the bill today.
Representative Woodson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Rep. Truenau, thank you for talking to me about the bills. I believe my call to you last night was about 11 o'clock. We talk about this bill. So I really thank you for putting the time that is needed in order for us to get what we need. And I really appreciate the fact that you have been working with NARA and you will continue to work with them in order to make the bill well tight or where we need to see the bill. I really appreciate all your efforts, and I look forward to vote up on the bill today, providing that you will continue to work with them, and I know that you will. So thank you.
Representative Tan.
Thank you, Rep, for bringing this bill again. I voted for it last year, and then I always do my due diligence. I ran traps on it again this morning with the two trucking companies in my district. And one of them had questions, but the other one fully supports. So I have complete confidence that you'll get there. So I'm going to be up on your bill. Thank you.
Rep. Truenau, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members, for your time today and working on this issue to save businesses money and save the state of Florida money. So with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Rep. Truenau, having closed, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin is excused. Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Clayton?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Members, by your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Members, our last bill is HB 623, Home Warranty Transfers, by Representative Steele, who is recognized to present from his chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, ranking members, vice chair, and members of the committee. Appreciate you guys taking a listen to my bill. HB 623 allows the transfer of warranties when somebody sells their home, and that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Steele, you are recognized to explain amendment barcode 633119.
63119 is a strike all. It automatically, it was not automatic for the transfer. The people had to actually notify the warranty. So we changed that to be automatic with the sale of the home. It corrected statutory references in the amendment, and it differentiated between warranty associations and builder back warranties. And that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, any public testimony on the amendment? There's none.
Yes.
Kerry Hebrink, Florida Home Builders Association. She waves in support. Thank you. Tim Meenan, Florida Service Agreement Association. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meenan, is your mic on?
I was just saying that you might be one of the better chairmen I've ever spoken before. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
One time I had a chairman respond back, Mr. Meenan, I make the jokes around here, so that would have been appropriate. Represent the Florida Service Agreement Association. They are companies that provide service contracts or what you might call an extended warranty on cars, houses, and consumer goods. In Florida, there are really two ways people buying a house get a warranty. One is the builder themselves, Kerry Hebrink represents them, might pen their own warranty and provide it. The second way is the builders might buy
a home warranty, which is pretty heavily regulated by the Office of Insurance Regulation from one of my members, and provide that to the consumer. So we support what you're doing here. I think anybody that suggests, for example, you buy a Ford F-150 and you sell it after a year, and whoever bought your car would not get the benefit of the remaining 2 years on the F-150, that's just not good for consumers. Representative Steele's worked with us in this bill, and we have a few edits we've suggested to him, and he's agreed to work with us, so we support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have no further public testimony on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Rep. Steele, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close.
Any objection to the adoption of the amendment? Seeing none, show that amendment adopted. Any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, any public testimony on the bill as amended? Edward Briggs, Florida Refrigeration and Air Conditioning Contractors Association, waives in support. Karen Murillo, AARP Florida, waives in support. Okay, members, any debate on the bill as amended? Rep. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Rep. Steele, for working on this good bill. It's an easy decision to be up on it for me. I mean, home affordability is increasingly more and more difficult. There's a lot of expenses that come into play when someone buys a home. There's title insurance, there's dock stamps, there's appraisals, inspections. This is just helping to eliminate one of those costs, making housing more affordable, and helping more Floridians accomplish the American dream. So thank you, Rep. Steele.
Rep. Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Steele, this is a great bill. I really appreciate you coming up with this bill at a time where we're seeing our homeowners going through so much in our state, and some of them can't even afford to buy a home. This is a very good bill and moving in the right direction. So I really appreciate it, and I look forward to supporting you on this great bill. So thank you.
Any other members in debate? Seeing none, Rep. Steele, you're recognized to close.
I'm going to waive close, but thank you guys for your comments.
Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Honshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin is excused. Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Clayton?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Thank you, members. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Steele. That concludes our agenda, members. I wish each of you a happy and blessed holiday season. I look forward to seeing you again when we hit the road in session. And with that, Rep. Woodson moves we adjourn. This meeting is over.